The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, June 17th, 2024.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She does everything you do.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my friend, my partner, and engineer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Elaine.
If my voice sounds a little rough to you, I had laryngitis. We were at the Juneteenth Festival, and man, we were dancing and having a good fun, and I kind of lost my voice, so it's a little bit rough, but I have my tea here, and I have Ken who's going to control the volume here, so it's not too agitating. I'm really excited about today's show. Joining me on the phone this morning will be Dr. Harriet Fraud. Dr. Fraud is a regular here on Women's Spaces. She's a mental health counselor and a hypnotherapist in practice in New York City. She's also a well-published author and writes about the pressures of families and economics in the United States. She's also a regular guest of Dr. Richard Wolff and his show Economic Update, which you can listen to every Tuesday from 11 to 12 on KBBF 89.1 FM here in Santa Rosa. During this show, we'll be talking about an interesting article Dr. Fraud sent me and I thought would be worth talking about. The article addresses women in the workplace and is titled, Women's Work Can No Longer Be Taken for Granted, by Lonnie Sussman. And we're going to talk about the article along with the Equal Rights Amendment, how that's going to impact women, and what is actually going on to give like a report on what's happening with women with all the rights that are being taken away, especially our right to choose and all the controversy over contraceptives. I can't believe that. I mean, one of the greatest things that's ever been invented is with birth control. We need to control the birth on this planet. We need to protect the planet and all that's going on. As we can see, we're already into the fire season here in Sonoma County, and it's kind of frightening. My heart goes out to all the people in Healdsburg that had to be evacuated. I mean, it's really crazy. Anyway, a reminder that tonight, the Sonoma County chapter of the National Organization for Women will be having their monthly meeting, and you can go to the NOW website, www.nowsonoma.org, to get all the codes and to join us at 7 o'clock. And I have a special announcement talking about the National Organization for Women. Everybody needs to save the date for August the 10th, 2024, from 10 to 6 p.m. We're going to be having the California conference here in Sonoma County. We're going to be hosting it, the Sonoma County chapter. I'm really, really excited about that. So if you go on to www.womenspaces.com, you can find out all the information that you need. And if you are interested in maybe being a sponsor or having a booth at the event, you can call Carmina Davidson. She's our president of the California chapters, and her telephone number is 909-268-7925. And if you go on www.womenspaces.com, you'll be able to see all that information. I'm really excited about that. So mark your calendars for August the 10th. Yes?
I thought NOW was not going to have a meeting.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're not having our meeting tonight. I made a mistake. Thanks a lot, Ken. I forgot once in a while we take a little vacation. I'm going to take a sip of hot tea now to kind of lubricate my voice. Boy, I'll tell you something. When you're a person on the radio and you lose your voice, it's really an amazing thing. But I'm just doing the best I can here. Let's give a special shout-out to Nancy Rogers and the Juneteenth Committee. They held their 54th Juneteenth celebration this Saturday at the Martin Luther King Park. It was a tremendous, tremendous success. A special shout-out to all those who came to the event and all those who made it possible. I was very honored to be I'm part of the team. I'm actually part of their program, the Entrepreneurs of Tomorrow. And during the celebration, there were several awards giving, including three scholarships to students graduating high school who'll be attending college. You know, I'm so proud to be part of this festival, because freedom is the creator, the great mystery, freedom is the great mystery, our creator that gave us this opportunity to be free, to walk together, to talk together, to be together. And what was so beautiful about the Juneteenth celebration is you really see the diversity of the coming together of white people, black people, Asian people, and Native American people, all races and people coming together for this wonderful, wonderful festival to celebrate freedom. You know, freedom is such a precious gift. You know, and when we start thinking about it, I mean, our African American brothers and sisters were enslaved for 400 years. It took a civil war for them to get some freedom, and they're still struggling for that freedom. And here women fought so hard to have choice over their own body, and all of a sudden it's being taken away from us. These are freedoms that we value, that we need in order to exist in our planet. You know, it's really a very sad thing when you think about losing freedom. And when you lose it, it's very, very hard to get it back. It's hard to get it to begin with. I mean, when you start thinking of what it took to end slavery, I mean, a civil war, thousands and thousands of people killed on both sides, what it took for women to get a right to choose, you know, to get the right to vote, thrown in prison, waterboarded, you know, what we marked for abortion, when we marched against the Vietnam War, and people were yelling at us and throwing things at us, and yet here Robert McNamara comes out and says, hey, it was a mistake. So we have to listen to each other. We have to talk to each other. We have to dialogue with one each other. And we have to celebrate our freedoms. And that was the beauty of Juneteenth. Well, I'm going to do a little bit of our history is our strength, and then I'm going to play a little blurb all about Juneteenth. I think it's better to just listen to it, particularly with my voice this way. Well, we have some special announcements here. Well, it's on June 17th, which is today, which is an amazing thing that happened. Susan B. Anthony was on trial for illegally voting in Rochester, New York, on November 5th, 1872. And they fined her $100, and they threatened to put her in jail, but she never paid the $100, and she never went to jail. But this is what women went through to get the vote. You know, they said, the heck with it. We're going to vote. We're going to do our thing. And now look what's happening. I mean, it's a wild ride, that's for sure. Well, the second announcement I have, and that is Juneteenth is now a national holiday, which takes place on Wednesday, June 19th. And the original Juneteenth was June 19th, 1865, where it's called, Juneteenth is called another, this our second National Independence Day. And it was Juneteenth of this day of the final order to the enforcement of the Emancipation Proclamation, and in Texas at the end of the American Civil War. Well, the American Civil War had ended, and it took 2 years before the folks in Galveston, Texas, found out about it. So let's go ahead, Ken. Let's play. We're going to play a little blurb, and it's all about Juneteenth, and it's history. It's called What is Juneteenth? History Behind the Holiday. And when we come back, we will continue talking a little bit about it. So let's go ahead, Ken. Let's play that right now for the folks.
What is Juneteenth? Juneteenth is the oldest known celebration commemorating the ending of slavery in the United States. President Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation, freeing enslaved Africans in the United States in 1862, and the 13th Amendment passed Congress, officially abolishing the institution of slavery in 1863. But it would take years for word to spread. On June 19, 1865, Union soldiers led by Major General Gordon Granger landed at Galveston, Texas, with the news that the Civil War was over and the roughly 250,000 enslaved people there were now free. The orders read, "The people of Texas are informed that in accordance with a proclamation from the Executive of the United States, all slaves are free. This involves an absolute equality of personal rights and rights of property between former masters and slaves, and the connection heretofore existing between them becomes that between employer and hired labor. The freedmen are advised to remain quietly at their present homes and work for wages. They are informed that they will not be allowed to collect at military posts and that they will not be supported in idleness either there or elsewhere. You might be wondering why it took so long to spread the word. General Robert E. Lee surrendered in April 1865, but Union troops didn't arrive until June. The Emancipation Proclamation only freed enslaved Africans in the Confederate states liberated by Union troops, and that didn't include Texas. Though slaves were lawfully freed, they were far from free. Many were even punished for trying to take advantage of their new rights. One former slave recalled seeing people shot and hanged after trying to escape to freedom. And another shared an account of being asked to work another 6 years and being whipped just like she was before. Even though the newly freed in Texas didn't receive the full benefits of freedom, they turned the day into a celebration. June 19th was coined Juneteenth, a blending of the words June and 19th. Every year, Juneteenth became a chance for people to get together with family members, measure progress against freedom, and teach rising generations the importance of self-improvement. They would read the Emancipation Proclamation, hear sermons, share meals, and play games. And many of those same traditions carry on today in Juneteenth celebrations across the country. Texas became the first state to make Juneteenth an official holiday in 1980. Since then, 46 other states and the District of Columbia have recognized Juneteenth as a state holiday or holiday observance. Although not a federal holiday, many global companies like Twitter, Square, Nike, and Lyft have made the day a company holiday in the wake of protests to end systemic racism sparked by the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Today, more than 150 years after celebrations began, June 19th is about remembering the past and moving toward a future that involves an absolute equality of personal rights and rights of property between former masters and slaves. Juneteenth, a celebration of freedom and the fight for its fulfillment.
Wow, a celebration of freedom, a right for its fulfillment. Well, I have to add two things. Since this was made, Juneteenth has actually become a federal holiday. And I want to do a shout out for a woman by the name of Opal Lee. She was born October 7th, 1926, and she's still alive. She's an American retired teacher, a counselor, and activist in the movement to make Juneteenth a federal recognized holiday, which is often she's often described as the grandmother of Juneteenth. On June 17, 2021, President Joe Biden signed Senate Bill S. 475, making Juneteenth the 11th federal holiday. Then in 2024, Biden awarded Lee the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the nation's highest civilian honor. It goes back to what Margaret Mead said, never underestimate the power of another human being. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz, and we've been talking about Juneteenth and the celebration and the federal holiday, which is happening on Wednesday, the 19th of June, across the United States. You know, and I really want to encourage people, get to know your African-American friends and people around you. You know, make an effort. You know, it's the diversity and the commonality that brings us together. You know, it's wonderful to be with all kinds of different people and get to know their cultures and get to understand who they are and what they're doing. And they get to know you. And when you get to know one another, you're much more comfortable. You really are. Well, we're going to take a musical break now. And before I introduce my guest, I'm really excited that I'm going to be interviewing Dr. Harriet Fraud, who is a hypnotherapist in New York and is also one of the mothers of the feminist second wave of women's history and women's movement, which I was a part of when I went back to Sonoma State in 1973. It was an amazing, amazing experience all of a sudden to start finding out about women's history, to find out about our power. to find out that we have a right. We have a right to a voice. And I had so sorry about that coughing. I'm telling you, this voice of mine is amazing. And that was We Are Family, sung by Sister Sledge, and I thought it was perfect. I thought that song was absolutely perfect in what we were talking about with Juneteenth. You know, we are family with all of our diversity. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And joining me on the phone is Dr. Harriet Fraud. Dr. Fraud, welcome. Welcome to Women's Spaces. As you can see, I'm having a little bit of longitis. So instead of me telling the audience about you, I'm going to ask you to tell them about yourself to help me save my voice, if that's okay with you.
Sounds great. I'm Harriet Fraud. I talk and write about the intersections of personal life with political and economic life in the U.S. I'm a founding mother of the women's movement, where it started in New Haven, Connecticut. It started in New York and then spread all around. That was in 1969. And I have been an active feminist and socialist ever since. And I'm privileged and pleased to be on Elaine's wonderful show.
Well, you know, thank you so much. Talk a little bit about what was the inspiration at that time? We were going to be talking about the ERA. We're going to be talking about women's rights and women in the workplace. Talk about what was the inspiration at that time? What was motivating the women? What was creating them to all come together?
Well, I think it was time. We had gotten active first in the civil rights movement, then in the committees to end the war in Vietnam. And we realized, wait a minute, we're an oppressed majority. And we've been fighting for others, as we should, and we need to fight for ourselves, too. And we had the sense, rather naively, that if we stand up, we're at the bottom, everyone will come up with us. And we were fighting for equality for all. And since women are a little more than half of the all, we thought that would do it. We didn't realize at the time that the CIA and FBI in the persona of Gloria Steinem would come in with the idea that we should have equality for women within a system of vast economic inequality, which is what we have today. But we had a vision that as people who get the lowest salaries and who are the bottom of the prestige and income in the United States, if we rise up, everything will come up with us. And that was our motivation and our excitement.
Well, can you remember what the first days were like? I mean, where did you get your confidence? I mean, I know for myself when I first marched for abortion, and the reason I did that is because one of my aunts had a backdoor abortion and almost died. And when all of a sudden the idea of freedom of choice came up, I was one of the first women out there to protest. But yet at the same time, I was scared to death. You know, I mean, it was the first time I was actually visible with an opinion like this. What was it like at that time?
Well, because I had been out there and visible in the civil rights movement and out there and visible as an opponent of the war in Vietnam and of war altogether, once I read Notes from the First Year, the very first publication of women's liberation in 1968, I thought, yeah, we've got to do this here. And I called friends of mine who had been active, and five agreed, and we started out with five women in my living room. And within a month, we had 100 people at a time in our meetings, where the American Independent Movement, which was an independent progressive electoral movement, said we could use their office. And it was huge. It was an idea whose time had come. We were an oppressed majority.
Well, at the same time, you know, we're looking at this. At the same time, we got the right to vote. Alice Paul, and I forgot the other, there was a second woman that wrote the ERA amendment, a resolution, that they still, to this day, has still not become part of the Constitution.
That's right.
So talk about that a little bit, about what that was. You know, what were some of the influences at that time around the ERA, and what do you think prompted it? Because I know, you know, when we start talking, we're going to talk about women and in the workplace, but at the same time, if we don't have equal representation, if we're not considered as equal citizens, I mean, that kind of puts a little bit of a barrier. Wouldn't you agree?
Totally. And then, look, it was in 1923 that Alice Paul suggested this and wrote up an original version. In 1920, we got the vote, and we realized that we may have the vote, but unless we're really considered equals, and unless we have equal rights across the board, we will not be able to defend ourselves. And the United States is very backward in this respect. There are 85% of UN members states have some kind of ERA in their constitution. And there are 14 nations that have complete ERA across the board. The United States is not one of those either, because we don't have paid maternity leave and we don't have parental leaves. We're one of five countries in the world that don't have paid maternity leave, and the other ones have all less than the population of New York City. They're Palau, Nauru, Papua New Guinea, and Tonga, and there's the U.S.
My goodness, that is really strange. You know, as you were talking, you know, I was thinking about, you know, equal rights, you know, and all that good stuff. And when we were standing up, you know, during the second wave of the women's movement, I remember not even realizing that. You know, not even realizing that men were getting more salary than I was. I mean, these things were not in my mind until the women's movement started emerging, and we started talking.
We're the ones who brought it to people's attention. At that point, we were getting 59 cents on the male dollar if we were white, and 49 cents if we were black, you know, for the same kind of work. Or for pink collar work, which they decided to designate as inferior because it was related to women's care work, which they totally depend on and have decided it should be paid less, whether it's in nursing or daycare or after school care or social work or teaching young children, you know, because they devalued us, they devalued all our work. And even though they depended on it for life itself,
Well, that's the crazy part of it is. That's the crazy sure part. Is. That's the crazy part that they're fighting. Now they want to give the embryo rights, you know, and here when once the child is born or once it comes out and once forget all of a sudden it. In the world, things tend to stop. Well, on the ERA, on the Equal Rights Amendment, what kind of impact would that have as far as making salaries equal?
Well, what it would do is give a legal basis for our claims across the board. And it would be in contradiction to some of the most backward things happening. Just this year, in 2024, the Southern Baptist Convention on Men and Women, and the Southern Baptists are an enormous number of people, have reinforced their idea that women must be subordinate to men. They're not allowed to be supervisors of men, bosses of men, etc. Men are supposed to protect women, even though they're the biggest cause of our deaths if we're between 15 and 44 years old. However, they're supposed to be our protectors, and we are to be subordinate. If we had an ERA, that would be illegal. You could contest the most backward kind of rulings if you had a legal standard that we are full and equal citizens. And so it would be a legal basis for us to make claims against legalizing our inferiority as a whole gender.
I can't believe that kind of legislation. I mean, when you say that, I just have to scratch my head and I have to think, wait a minute, what woman's going to go along with that? And we know many, many of them
many do.
Well, you know, you suggested this article to me, which I think was fascinating because it's more of a global article or talks a lot about what's going on in New Zealand and other countries around the ERA and around bringing equal rights to women. But one thing that really stuck out to me after reading the article was they talked about, and I think that's what we're talking about here, is occupational segregation.
Yes.
What does that mean? And again, back to the ERA and back to women's place in the workplace, how is that either giving us a plus or a minus or supporting us or not supporting us with this idea?
Well, it gives us a minus, and it doesn't have to, because more than half of American working women work in what is called pink-collar jobs. Those are lower-paid jobs relating to women's traditional roles, whether they are child care people. Child care workers in the United States get the same as parking lot attendants, and we know watching children and being with and educating children is not the same as sitting there and watching that cars don't get stolen. That we have been, our work, our care work in the home, was considered either ordained by God because we were born with a vagina, or somehow natural instinct. And so it wasn't counted as work at all. The cooking, the cleaning, the arranging, the social arranging for a whole family, the emotional work that we do, the sex work that we did, all of it was counted as instinct, not labor. And it wasn't even admitted it was labor. So that women's work has been devalued consistently. And that's one of the things that women are really rebelling against. And 70% of divorces are initiated by women because they don't want to be married to men who require a second shift when the women get off from work to start a second shift at home, the way Arlie Hochschild's book Second Shift describes. And they don't want to be put at an economic and career disadvantage by having the full care of children, and then men leave them or the marriage collapses and they have gotten nowhere in their career because they've had to work either part-time or not at all or from home on low-paid jobs because of the huge responsibilities and labor involved with children. They haven't admitted that that's work either, although anyone who's had children, like you and I have, know that's work. That's real hard work. And so, you know, for the first time, all around the world, women are not having children and they're not getting married, you know?
Well, you know, it's real interesting you bring that up. I can't help but think about Ken's family. Ken was brought up where they were 8 children, and his mother definitely. I mean, I saw the one of the most organized women, pulled things together. I mean,
yeah.
she was like running a corporation with these 8 children, and to have to organize them, discipline them, make sure their dinners are ready, all this stuff that goes on. And she was just a tiny little woman. I mean, she was just amazing to me. Well,
yeah.
You know, when you bring this up, there's something that you, when I asked you for a few questions, I just want to tell my listeners what I do when I'm going to have a guest on. I always ask them to send me 5 questions so I know what they're really passionate about and I know what they think is important to bring up, and then I integrate my questions. Well, you talked about women have been the most affected in the world of work, and you talked about there are 3 different positions that the United States women are. What are those? What are those positions, and how do they impact as far as what women's responsibility is, like bringing forth life plus all the other things that are put upon us?
Well, women, you know, you and I are from a transitional generation. But women's work has been not only the labor that you go through to have a child come out of you, but the labor of child care, which is huge, which involves emotional care, physical care, organization, social integration, a lot of physical work in terms of just doing the 3 washings you need a day because the kid always vomits or craps on himself, not out of any badness, but just because that's what they do. And keeping things in order is a huge job. But those weren't considered work. They were considered instinct. And so that's one area that was completely erased. Nobody has even defined the work that goes into women's traditional labor at home with children in their homes and with their husbands, taking care. And as an extension of that, 55% of women work in what they call pink collar jobs. Those are jobs that are overwhelmingly done by women. It's like in the professions, we're either teachers or nurses or social workers. Those are our biggest professions and the least well-paid of all the professions. Teaching is the least well-paid profession that requires a master's degree, just typically. And so there are, you know, our work has been devalued and debased, and we're in the process of trying to rectify that, although there are others, like the right wing with their lack of abortion access, who want us to have to keep doing that job while forcing us into jobs outside the home as well.
Well, also forcing us to have children.
Right, because population is going down in the United States and in all other developed countries except France. It's going down much less because they have a superb, well, they have free medical care and they have a superb early childhood child care program that is free at the age of 3 years old and $1 an hour before that, and it includes going home after your day in a clean outfit with 3 good meals provided. Very different from us who have no daycare that's guaranteed and free.
So you're saying the 3 different positions are, one is labor, one is child care, and then the other would be emotional care.
Emotional care and social care.
And
we
social
make
care.
Sure we're the ones who arrange that our children have play dates. We're the ones who arrange that our kids have manners and know how to get along with people.
Well, you know, the question all of a sudden that comes up in my mind as we're talking is that I think when it comes to freedom of choice, I think most people are afraid, or most men particularly are afraid, that if women continue to have the choice, that they're going to be actually thrown out. There's not going to be any room for them. Which actually, when you start thinking about it, the women's movement actually liberated men also.
It certainly did, and we made a mistake in the women's movement. We made a mistake in making it a movement to change gender roles, and not just women's role, but men's role, so we could give them permission to have feelings and needs, so that when their women leave them, they don't go berserk, and so that they wouldn't be, they'd be allowed to have needs for grieving and sadness and loneliness, rather than what they are now, which is they only have real permission to be angry as an emotion, and that's why they're almost all the violent criminals and all of the mass shooters. And there's a mass shooting in the United States, at least one every day, where some angry male is so upset about people and so unconnected with the feelings of other people that he could go in and just shoot innocent people that he doesn't even know. We could have said, you can have your emotions. You could be needy too. We can care for each other knowing we both need care. Would be nice.
I think, you know, when I look back and I think about that, I think about, because there was so much anger and so much oppression that women were feeling, that they just wanted to move out on their own and just get out of my way.
Right.
You know, and I think that has really changed an awful lot. You know, I really do. I think there are more men and women that are really coming together. Like you said, people are deciding not to get married, deciding not to have children, you know, working more in partnerships, or even working alone. Well, Harry, we're going to take a musical break now, if that's okay with you. And then
sure.
I want to come back and I want to talk about this whole thing about the Republican Party and what's going on, and how we can maybe get the ERA, and how we can even stand up a little bit more to improve our lives in the work setting. And the song that I picked on is called, it's an old gospel song. It's called Hold On, Keep Your Eye on the Prize.
Yes.
And it's sung by Barbara DeYoe and Lightning Hopkins. And the reason that I chose that song is because we have to keep our eye on the prize. And for women, mm-hmm. choice is freedom.
That's right. Freedom of choice.
You know, it took us out of bondage.
That's right. We weren't enslaved to the home by having so many children.
And, you know, we're all, and what's so amazing is that we're all in this together. You know, I mean, when you come to, you know, it's so interesting when you talk about class and division and religion and all that. And we're so divided that we forget that we're just one species that has to live on this earth and learn to get along. So let's go ahead. We're going to play, Ken, let's go ahead and play Keep Your Eye on the Prize. And when we come back, we'll continue our wonderful conversation with Dr. Harriet Fraud. Let's go ahead, Ken.
Yes, keep your eye on the prize. Now, what's the prize?
You know, the civil rights movement was definitely a prize, and look how hard they're trying to unravel all the good and all we move forward. The second prize is our right to choose as women.
It certainly is. Our right to be equal citizens across the board.
Exactly. So welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I have the honor of talking with Dr. Harriet Fraud. We're talking about the Equal Rights Amendment. We're talking about women in the workplace, and we're also talking about equal rights here. So welcome back, Harriet, and thank you. You know, I just want you to know, I want to publicly say this, that it's an absolute honor to talk with you and to that you share so much intelligence and so much history, and I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for.
And the thanks are mutual.
Well, the next question I have for you is, you know, and this is, like I said, this was a question that you sent me, and I thought, wow, this is a big question. Why are abortion rights and contraception such a big issue with the Republican Party and is now affecting traditional labors in marriage, housewifery, and midbearing and childbearing in today's America? Why is that happening?
I think it's happening because the birth rate is really going down. So look, the United States never gave benefits to parents, in part because they counted on immigrants as replenishing their population. Now they're very biased against immigrants and migrants to the United States. So they want a whole lot of unwanted children. Now, we do have to remember that the crime rate went down between 18 and 20 years after they allowed abortion, because it doesn't help anyone's mental health to be unwanted. However, they want to roll back the clock. What they want to do is go back to the 1950s when whites were the majority and white men got a family wage that supported dependent wives who worked full-time for them and brought up their children. Well, ever since the mid to late 70s, that can't happen because men don't earn enough to support dependent full-time servant wives and their children, and so women were pushed into the workforce. Well, they don't want to stop women from going into the workforce, but what they want to do is force them to keep having children so that they won't count on immigrants to do the work of the society that keeps it running so that they can go to the golf course, you know, which is planted by someone else and mowed by someone else, and someone else carries their silly golf clubs. You can see it when you see Trump out on the course. But, you know, they don't. Population is going down across the globe. By the year, I was so impressed by this, by the turn of the century, 2100, 97% of countries in the world won't reproduce themselves because women have to work outside the home and inside the home, and they have access to birth control, which the Republicans are trying to attack as well, and so that we can live independently, and also we don't have to have all these jobs at once and be dependent, and also we don't have to take abuse, because we have ways to leave. And with children, it's much, much harder. So that women are opting out of their traditional duties, with some exceptions, and the French are one exception that is doing much better, but that's because they give amazing child care and also excellent subsidies for single mothers and clothing allowances for school children and so on, so that the burden isn't felt entirely on the parents.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because when Johnson was president, we had the Comprehensive Employment and Training Act, which was called CETA, and that they were doing that. They actually had child care,
right.
All kinds of grants for women were returning to college. I mean, it was an amazing thing. And then all of a sudden, another president comes up and says, oh, the welfare mother, she's driving a Cadillac and taking drugs.
That's Reagan.
So we have to end those programs. And I remember going to graduation after graduation, law school, you know, all kinds of different things that people were just, they were being supplemented for. And so it's amazing when the government steps in and does its job, which is supposed to be taking care of the people and making sure that we have equality and we have equal rights and we have what we need. It runs very well. In fact, I was telling Ken, when Johnson first brought Medicaid in, and I know people are not going to believe this, you had not only doctor, you had dental and vision and anything else that you needed. There, it was just an amazing thing. And all the, and there was no supplemental this or that. It was just here it is. It's, and everybody was taken care of. It was an amazing thing. Well, you know, time goes by so fast, and you can see that my voice is just about leaving me. And so I would like to end our conversation with talk about suggestions of what women can do, and, you know, what steps can they take at this time, and how do you believe, you know, I do the Women's Spaces Pledge at the end of the month, you know, my self-esteem mm-hmm. doesn't depend on anything outside of me. You know, how can women gain the confidence they need? I mean, as a therapist, what kind of advice would you give them?
Well, my advice is to join with other people and make sure that they know our joining is dependent on our rights being championed. One of the things Martin Luther King said to people at the Longshoremen's Union, who won only when they started to include blacks in their union, because otherwise black people who needed jobs were used as strike breakers. He said the best way to achieve equality is join unions together where you have something in common. And I know that Sean Fain, who's the head of the auto workers union, who just won really good contracts and a 25% raise for the 400,000 auto workers, is a firm believer that everybody in that union has to be treated as an equal. I think we have to join with other people and tell them, hey, we're joining with you. You join with us. The abortion rights movement won in Argentina, even though the Pope himself went there to argue against it, and in Ireland, which is a very traditionally Catholic country. And it won because the indigenous movements, the progressive labor movement, the movements for racial equality, the climate justice movement, all joined together. And the deal was, we stand up for you and you stand up for us. And that's why Mexico has abortion rights. That's why all these countries that you wouldn't believe it, and they have a woman president now, Claudia Sheinbaum. Wow. That it's because we have to join with others and say we are joining as women, and you look out for us and we look out for you, and we all need choice. I think that's very important. And one of the movements that's growing like crazy is the union movement. There were 200% more strikes last year than there were the year before. And people in what are pink collar jobs, like museum workers, are unionizing, but also usually male jobs, doctors are unionizing. I know anesthetists at the hospital in San Jose are organizing. Nurses have had, just in New York City alone, 14,000 nurses went on strike last year and won. And people supported them because they said, we need to care for you better. We need to be paid better, and there need to be more of us to care for you. And the community went behind them. So we need to unify and fight together.
You know what I was just thinking as you were talking? That they throw the word, so when you start talking about unions and they start throwing around the word socialism and then communism and all these words, that, you know, these trigger words, you know, people need to start thinking about, forget the words, it's coming together, it's working
exactly.
together for a better future for our children. And, you know, it was very interesting when you talk about the union movement. My father was a union man. I mean, because he was a union man, my sister was able to go to college. You know, my brother was able. We were able to have benefits that they did not have, my parents did not have before they, before, you know, before unions came in and all the different freedoms that they had. And when you look at these trigger words, I don't understand why people don't just stop and think, you know, because when you look at capitalism, you look at one person has, say, $600 or $700 million. They're hoarding it, and someone else is starving. Who's the socialist? I mean,
Well, those labels were started in the U.S. after World War II because our biggest ally, the nation that lost the most in fighting against fascism, was the Soviet Union, Russia. 30 million people were killed during World War II in Russia. And they referred to, on the radio, they referred to Joseph Stalin, who was a monstrous dictator, as Uncle Joe. But after the, and corporations in the New Deal, corporations were taxed at 96.8% in order to pay for the New Deal during the Depression. And the reason that they were willing to be taxed is that FDR could say to his fellow rich buddies, look, with the socialist and communist movements here, they'll take it if you don't give it up. Because people were organized and there was no social stigma. One in every four families had an active communist. And the slogan of the communists at that point was, communism is the new Americanism. But then when the war was over, and they needed an enemy to keep up war production, and Russia was chosen, and they wanted, the corporations wanted to break this sympathy with socialists, they started the McCarthy era, where a communist was a traitor, and a socialist was a fellow traveler, traitor, and a leftist was a traitor. And they put people in jail and deported them, much more strict than with the insurrectionists who actually were trying to overthrow the government. But, you know, they had to, the big money and the big corporations had to reverse the socialist trend that was happening. And they did it through anti-communism. But people, now 49% of young people prefer socialism to capitalism. They don't stand for that anymore.
Well, I think they see it as more of a social to come together.
Exactly. Well, come together as equals.
Well, Harriet, we have come to the end of our show. I'd like any last words real quickly, and also give us your website and any inspiring thought you'd like to share.
My website is HFRAAD, HarrietFraad.com. Very easy. And what I want to share is we've got to unify. We need to get a party that unifies all of us who care about the climate, care about each other, care about children, care about the future, care about our rights, and that's most of us, and we'll win.
Well, Dr. Harriet Fraud, thank you for that beautiful thought, and thank you so much for being a guest on Women's Spaces.
Oh, you're so welcome, and I hope your voice gets better.
Oh, it's on demand. Thank you so much. Well, That's it for our show, folks. You've been listening to my conversation with Dr. Harriet Fraud, who is a hypnotherapist in New York and called the mother of feminism, actually, brought with the new wave of women and women's history that came in the 1970s, late 60s and early 70s. An amazing woman. I want to remind you that you've been listening, that the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of the station, its board of directors, or Women's Spaces. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz, and I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening. And I want to remind you, like I do every week, our children are the future, and we must never lose sight of that. We must invest in them. We must invest in good child care, good education, good food. Look at here, we are burning up here in Sonoma County again in Healdsburg. We have to watch, climate change is upon us. We have to come together and stand up and say, enough is enough. Let's put our money into safety, our money into compassion, our money into war. Not war. War is not the answer. It never was. It never will be. Anyway, this is Elaine B. Holtz. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. Thank you so much for listening. And, you know, I really, really want to encourage you to please send me an email at elaineb.holtz@gmail.com.
com. Let me know that you've been listening. Let me know what you think of the show. If you have any suggestions for guests, please, please feel free to let me know. I'm always happy to consider a woman to have her come on to talk about what she's doing. And I'm very excited because next week is going to be our last show of the month, and we'll be doing the Women's Spaces Pledge. And you can go on www.womenspaces.com, and there's a copy of that pledge. All you have to do is do a copy and go ahead and copy it onto your Word, and you can have a copy of the pledge. Anyway, thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to being with you the next time.
A woman in your life, she can feel so easily. She knows everything you do because the woman in your life is you. And who is sure to give you courage? And who will surely make you strong? Who will bear all the joy that is coming to you if not a woman in your life? She's someone to pursue. She's patient and she's waiting, and she'll take you home now.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, June 17th, 2024.